my first class, I looked over the room. I was looking for brown people. I found a couple of African-American folks, two brown folks, and then everyone else was white.
There's a lot of pressure to do well, especially I think with my background. There's a lot of people who have put a lot into me being here today. And so there's a lot of pressure to do well and to make those people who have supported me this whole time proud of what I'm doing.
I think in my mind, the way that I'm always going to survive and navigate is going to be just like that undocumented mentality, because that's how I survived in this country for decades.
Bienvenidos a UndocuTalks. This is Alejandro Mendiaz Rivera, and you're listening to our second season. This is the podcast by immigrant youth for immigrant youth, where we discuss topics around immigration through the lenses of culture, education, and art. You just listened to some really powerful statements from some of our outstanding Undocu scholars. This episode is titled New Beginnings because we will be exploring Eric, Nayeli, and Daniela's journey as they embark into graduate and professional school in their respective fields. Stay tuned throughout the show to learn more about their experiences. And now, a word from our partners.
Welcome to California State University San Bernardino's Undocumented Student Success Center. Our mission is to create a welcoming, dynamic resource environment for our undocumented student population and to provide a safe place where allies and other persons with a common interest for undeserved populations can congregate, exchange ideas, and provide support to one another and their students.
You can reach out to us and find more information at www.csusb.edu/undocumented-student-success-center and on social media at UndocuYodis.
Rafa, when I first moved to the United States, I came to live in Belen, New Mexico. And I know that you recently went down there to interview Nayeli. What was that experience like for you?
From Albuquerque, it's about an hour drive to Belen, New Mexico. We pass one Native reservation along the way, and we went and did the story essentially along the Rio Grande. And we almost got attacked by a pack of dogs in the middle of the interview.
We have just ran into a crowd of angry pack dogs, but luckily they had owners in. They were able to restrain them before got eaten in the middle of this interview. Maybe we'll walk the other way.
So we took a long walk around the Rio Grande. We listened to the nature sounds. We got away from civilization for a second. And we got an opportunity to talk about her experience growing up undocumented in the United States.
I've been in this country since I was 3 years old. This is all I know. So I've been thinking a lot about when I start doing my research for grad school, maybe possibly doing my field work in Mexico so that I can go back. But I was fully undocumented for 28 years of my life. When I was 28, I finally was granted a U visa, and I was able to get that U visa because I was a victim of an assault. I cooperated with the police. Like, I did everything that I was supposed to do to get that visa. And it took about 4 years, but I finally got it. So it does give me a pathway to citizenship. In 2020, I can apply for the green card. I should have my green card by 2021. And then, I mean, after that, it's like 5 years to become a citizen. It is definitely not a handout. If I would have been able to achieve this status in a different way, I would have. Because I don't think people realize the trauma that came with the assault. And then the time that it has taken me to heal. Like, I still feel like I'm never going to be healed completely. I had to go through things to get that visa that I really don't wish for anybody else.
What an amazing opportunity to get to interview an amazing scholar like Nayeli Rafa. You're pretty lucky because you also got to speak to one of our future medical doctors, correct, Daniela?
I got to visit the UNM Medical School and see what a day in the life of Daniela, who just got accepted to medical school, would be like. We entered one of the classrooms that looked more like a doctor's office, and she walked me through some of the regular things that she does, such as enter the room, wash your hands, get the table ready for the patient that is about to come in.
My parents always worked really, really hard. They worked all day for my brothers and I to have the best future possible. They always taught us the importance of education and also service, which I think really shaped our lives growing up. You know, volunteering in different places and just having this attitude of giving to others really shaped where I am today and why I feel so strongly about this career that I'm working towards.
Aside from talking to one of our future medical doctors here in New Mexico, you also got the opportunity to conduct a phone interview with one of our future UNDOCU-lawyers, Mr. Eric Nava. What was that experience like?
It was great to hear Eric's story about his road trip to Arkansas. He had the opportunity to travel with his family, and they listened to some pretty cool tunes along the way.
The entire road trip consisted of mainly cumbias, gruperas, temerarios. Thinking back, driving to Arkansas, everything seemed to change after Amarillo, Texas. From Tucumcari, you know, it was still dry. It felt like New Mexico. It was hot. It was desert. But it seemed like right after we passed Amarillo, Texas, the road started to open up. It became very flat. And, you know, before we knew it, we were in Oklahoma City. But I distinctly recall just arriving to Oklahoma, getting off the car, and it was incredibly humid. Bugs left and right. Very different climate. So immediately I started to understand, you know, that this was going to be much different than the land of enchantment.
What a privilege to hear the amazing stories of these three undocumented scholars. All of them are graduates from UNM, but they're all embarking on different journeys. Nayeli is going off to do her PhD at Northern Arizona University. And the power couple, the undocumented power couple, Daniela is staying here at UNM to go to medical school. And Mr. Nava is going off to Little Rock, Arkansas to do law school. By the way, if you thought Mr. Eric Nava's name sounded familiar, that's because he is the little brother of my news segment co-host, Ms. Cindy Nava. But you'll get to hear a little bit more about that connection later on in the show. You just listened to a fabulous cumbia called Oye Mujer by Remix. And now we're going to come back to our UNDOCU-scholars Nayeli, Eric, and Daniela as they talk about some of the challenges that come along with being undocumented and applying to graduate and professional school.
Institutions like universities still consider me and treat me as an undocumented student or an international student. I mean, the only thing that the visa has done for me has given me a work permit and a social security number, but it hasn't done much else for me. I still don't qualify for financial aid. I still cannot get any kind of services, like I don't think I can apply for food stamps or Medicare. Well, it's really scary. It's intimidating, I think, especially for me because of being undocumented, because these are opportunities that, like, we don't get a lot. You know, I don't know a whole lot of other undocumented students who are doing PhD programs, going through the same things that I'm going through. So it's very difficult, like, to be leaving that support system when we've already been limited to resources as it is. It's also one of those opportunities that I don't want to pass up, because through this whole journey, the way that I navigated it was really difficult, because I found out that I didn't have access to fee waivers for the exams, for like the GRE or the LSAT, because I took the LSAT too. And then a lot of universities were asking for individuals to be citizens to get the fee waivers for the application. So I just think, like, I went through all that and I got this awesome opportunity. Like, it was, all of it was worth it. And now I feel like I'm in a position to help other people.
I saw a flyer for this combined BAMD program. And so I read the description and I was like, this sounds perfect. This is what I need to do. But I was also very cautious because I didn't want to get too excited before finding out the requirements. So I remember, like, quickly, like, scanning the document and going down to the requirements, looking for that citizenship requirement. And it didn't have one. All it said was you need to be a New Mexico resident, which I was, and so I was super excited. There were still many challenges, especially financial challenges, because I could not receive federal loans, which is how most students fund their medical education. So that was really stressful. So it just took a lot of talking to different people. I had a lot of advocates as an undergrad that, you know, did everything that they could to try to find a solution for me. And so we figured something out, and here I am today.
I faced a lot of barriers going, you know, into this. I think the first time I realized I wanted to go to law school, I realized this is not going to be easy. Financially, you know, the LSAT's expensive. Prepping is expensive because as an undocumented person, not everyone has the opportunity to take 4 or 5 months off and study for this exam. And applying to different universities and different law schools was very challenging just because of the nature of having DACA and where we're at right now. I recall looking at every single state in the country and figuring out which states are immigrant friendly and which aren't, and then the ones that are neutral, as well as, you know, which ones considered me to be an international student and which ones considered me to be an in-state student. I faced a lot of barriers there. Thankfully, here in Little Rock, they don't necessarily have a lot of legislation for immigrants, but they were able to provide me with an in-state scholarship. But trying to get to law school, it in itself was very difficult, but I don't regret not having done it.
And now a word from one of our community partners.
DACA Scholars is the number one app used by Latino students across the country. Inside of DACA Scholars, you will find over 140 scholarships for both undocumented and DACA students, all the way from high school to a PhD level. DACA Scholars is absolutely free and available for all iPhones, Androids, and Windows Phone.
And now we'll hand it over to Norma for our mental health segment.
Welcome back, everyone. You're listening to your host, Norma Ramirez, with the UndocuTalks mental health segment. We are happy to start off with you all as we begin a new school year. Last week, I presented at the American Psychological Association, APA, on my experience as a DACA recipient in graduate school. And afterward, I had people ask me how I have made it this far. The following is inspired by my thoughts on this question in the context of self-care and the new academic school year. As we begin the new school year, we can be experiencing many emotions. We may have emotions ranging from excitement to dread. However, there are things that we can do to maximize our school year.
How can we plan for the best school year?
One of the things that we can do is that we can break down our year into smaller parts. Thankfully, we have these built in with semesters or quarters, and we can use that to familiarize ourselves with the syllabus and create our schedules from them. And as a pro tip, we can watch out for big assignments and prepare for them ahead of time. This will also help us find a rhythm. Once we know kind of our schedule and that kind of thing, we can find a rhythm that works for us. For example, are you a morning or a night person? When do you feel your best to do your academic work? Knowing this will help you plan your time according to your strengths. So things, you know, that will set you up for success. We have to provide downtime and self-care time. So this includes time with family and friends, sleep and rest, and seeing a therapist. And we know that finding a good therapist that understands our unique situation can be difficult. However, most colleges and universities provide about 10 sessions included in your student fees. This means that you already paid for them when you signed up for classes, so you might as well use them.
Gets us to think at some of the potential things that might come up, but what about the things that we unforesee and challenges that might arise that we do not account for?
It's hard to talk about unforeseen challenges, but I think there are things that we can do that will help us deal with them better. So one of the things that I would highly recommend is to connect with your professors. Find one professor each semester or quarter that you appreciate. For example, someone that you feel safe with and that has knowledge in your field of study, and then email them. Start off with what it is that you appreciate them. For example, that might have helped you understand the material better, or they spoke something that it truly impacted you somehow, and then ask to set up a meeting during office hours. This is important. They will be able to connect you with their connections when you are seeking to apply for scholarships and or graduate school. They can also be your recommenders that can advocate for you within the institution. Also, if something happens where maybe you have to miss class or something like that, when you have that relationship with your professors, it'll be easier to make up the workload or figure figure out what the next steps would be for that class.
Can we reach out to friends, Norma?
Of course. So making friends doesn't seem to get easier as we get older, unfortunately. However, having friendly faces in our classes makes it better. Not only do we feel less alone, but if we have to miss a class, we can ask them to share their notes, and also we can do that for them as well. And so this is about making community and finding people that we like.
So you mentioned this notion of rhythm and schedule. Can you tell us a little bit more about that?
We mentioned we cannot predict what will happen, but having a steady schedule and rhythm can sustain us while we process these unforeseen circumstances. If we already know what our Monday looks like and we're, I don't know, say your car breaks down, you're trying to figure out what to do, your rhythm can help you kind of stay in touch with the world as it keeps moving, because sometimes we may feel like there's a curveball, right? And so knowing our schedule will help us to keep moving along as, say, you start to fix your car. And that way there would be less obstruction to what your process is like during that time.
And these are self-care tips that you've shared with us, and your segment really helps us at remembering that self-care is really important. Do you want to share some final words with us about self-care tips?
You can listen to our previous episodes so that you could get familiarized with those tips that we've done, and also stay tuned as we continue sharing throughout the year. And as always, feel free to connect with us at OnDocuTalks on Facebook and Instagram, or through email at OnDocuTalks@gmail.com.
If that song sounded familiar to you, it might be because you're a soccer fan. That song was Live It Up by Nicky Jam, Will Smith, and Ara Streffy, and it was actually the official 2018 World Cup song. Once again, my name is Alejandro Mendiaz, and I am your co-host for the news segment. We're now going to be transitioning into a recap of this summer's most pressing news on immigration.
We just listened to the cries of children who were detained at a McAllen, Texas detention center. As you could hear, it's cries of suffering, of sorrow, of separation, of longing to see their families. And it's just heartbreaking to see that and hear that. Unfortunately, this is one of the things that we've had to deal with as a community with this summer. I know it's been in the minds of everybody, those affected and those not affected. And many people who are not in the affected community are starting to open their eyes. And through this audio recording by some journalists that got out publicly, many people are angry, they're distressed, they're suffering, and they're paying attention to the immigration debate, the immigrant rights movement, and the immigrant plight. Alejandro, this is one of the themes that you wanted to touch up on this month.
That's right, Rafa. Hearing this clip is absolutely heart-wrenching, and it really hits home for those of us that were able to make it across the border without being separated from our families. You know, I can't help but think every time that I hear these clips or read these stories that could have been me. You know, that could have been my family. I could have been one of those kids detained at the border and separated from my mom. And so this is one of the first points that I want to talk about as we talk about updates for the summer, is this ongoing debate and, you know, really humanitarian struggle as kids continue to be separated from their parents at the border. You have people from Central America mainly coming up to the U.S. border and trying to seek asylum. And so when you try to seek asylum in the United States, that doesn't mean that you are entering illegally, that you are crossing illegally. It means that you are requesting entrance into the United States. And what's happening with these families is that they're being separated. A lot of times these families are coming here with young children, and the children are being ripped apart from their moms and from their dads, and they're being placed in different detention centers away from their families. And so you have kids as young as 1 year old being looked over by different agencies of the United States, not by their families. And this has caused a lot of distress, a lot of public outcry, you know, a lot of trauma for both the parents and the kids. So it's been on the news a lot for that reason, but I think there's been also a lot of misinformation because opponents of immigration and, you know, proponents of this family separation are saying, well, yeah, you know, these people are here illegally. Let's separate them. You know, let's discourage them from trying to cross the border. But it's actually, you know, these families' rights to be able to request asylum.
One of the things that we've seen over the summer is multiple protests across many different cities and many detention centers calling for, as you heard in this, some of these recordings from different sites, is abolish ICE. And so one of the things that you wanted to talk to us about today, Alejandro, was thinking about what does abolish ICE mean and how do we think about this as a structural issue and is this the right target to hit in terms of thinking about abolish ICE?
That's right, Rafa. I think abolishing ICE has really been on a lot of people's minds, but I want to delve into this a little bit further because it might not be as simple as it seems. ICE is Immigration and Customs Enforcement, and so they are the piece of immigration enforcement that is supposed to do internal enforcement. So what does that mean? Anywhere inside the United States within 100 miles or 100 miles away from the border. So that's very different than Customs and Border Patrol. Customs and Border Patrol does the border up to 100 miles away. They're two completely different agencies. ICE is mostly responsible for searching out people who have outstanding warrants, who have, you know, are on the priority list for deportation, such as, you know, violent criminals, things like that. However, ICE has very little to no oversight. And so there are a lot of ICE agents who overstep their boundaries, who arrest people without warrants, without, you know, good cause, just for being, you know, in this country and not having documents, even if they don't meet any of the priority guidelines, or sometimes they're doing a search on a home looking for an individual who did commit a crime, and, you know, they end up taking this individual's whole family. And so that's a little bit about ICE, and I think that the movement to abolish them really kind of goes hand in hand with some of the family separations that have started some of that outcry. But it's very important to note that ICE is not the agency responsible for separating families. That's Customs and Border Patrol, along with some of our, you know, child welfare services, human services for the United States. And so I think we need to be informed of what abolishing ICE would look like. There's a few politicians, notable politicians even, that have jumped in on this, such as Senator Elizabeth Warren. You know, she's from Massachusetts, very a prominent figure. However, you also have other Democrats and other politicians and other organizations saying, well, it's not a very good investment of resources at this time to fight for the abolishment of ICE. Why? Because it would come down to the Trump administration to decide whether they want to abolish ICE or not, or it would come down to this Republican-controlled Congress to decide whether they want to abolish ICE or not. And frankly, it's very much an uphill battle. And although it's a very admirable fight and a very admirable cause, more sensible politicians are calling for a reform and heavier oversight over ICE. That sound is exactly what we've been getting from Congress on immigration. Just crickets.
From the last season, we talked a lot about DACA. And we talked a lot about DACA because it was on the public imaginary and the public discussion and media everywhere. Defend Dreamers. We heard the hashtag. We heard a lot of the people say, and we saw it all over everybody's Facebook profiles. But as we saw from this last piece that we just talked about, that has shifted to more common phrases like abolish ICE, but we're not hearing about DACA. So you wanted to talk about DACA and how we are not talking about DACA.
That's right, Rafa. I want to bring us up to speed, and unfortunately, there's not a lot to bring us up to speed on, so let's talk about that. So one of the other points that I wanted to touch on is last season, we gave quite a few updates on DACA, on Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals. One of the last things we had mentioned was that there were some prominent Democrats and Republicans trying to force a vote in Congress on some immigration-related bills. Well, over the summer, surprise, surprise, Congress did nothing. They brought up a few bills, and they were not bills that passed or that went anywhere. And so their conversations have actually moved away now from immigration. They dealt a little bit with the family separation issue over the summer. It actually ended up being a court order that forced the Trump administration to have to reunite families by July 26th. They're not actually complete, then they're still trying to work on that. I mean, unfortunately, you know, the update is that Congress is still sitting in the same place where we left off. However, you, our listeners, have a huge impact to make. This November is our midterm election, and we really, really want you to be informed on who your congressional candidates are, whether your senators are up for re-election or not, your local officials, and really push to hold your elected officials accountable and to get out to vote. And if you're like myself or many other of our podcast collective members who can't vote, then get your friends out to vote. You know, I encourage all my best friends, my family members who can vote to get out, because that's the only way we're going to get this Congress to do something, is if they see that we're voting and we're really being active and really pushing the issues that we care about.
If you're an avid on DocuTalks listener, you know that me, Rafael Martinez, is not a contributor to the Undocu News segment. So you might be asking, why am I filling in for Miss Cindy Nava? Well, Cindy Nava is missing from our Undocu News segment for this first episode. Where is she, Alejandro?
Well, my friend and colleague Cindy Nava is currently on her way to Chicago. She is making an amazing transition in her life. She has accepted a position at a national Hispanic leadership organization. And so she had to, unfortunately, relocate. And so for this segment, she was not able to record with us, but definitely expect to hear from her in upcoming segments. And Cindy, we love you and we wish you the best of luck. We know that this move is what's right for you and what's best for our communities.
That's what I like to call hashtag Undocu Excellence. And I say that because we have a very talented collective team, not just within our team in DocuTalks, but within our population. We're making some significant strides, and Miss Cindy Nava is definitely one of those individuals that's making amazing strides. So we're going to miss her here in Albuquerque, New Mexico, but I know she's going to make great impacts in Chicago and at the national level. But we did get a chance to do some recordings at her farewell party just a few weeks ago. So here are some of those highlights that you'll be able to listen to. Her own words as she said farewell to her family, friends, and to some of her colleagues. Here is Miss Cindy Nava saying farewell to Albuquerque, New Mexico.
Oh, there's one right here. Okay, the one thing.
Well, thank you all so much for being here. I'm really, really grateful. Muchas gracias por acompañarnos. It was a very unexpected opportunity. It came out of sort of nowhere. I was not expecting it at all, but it was a true calling, and I knew that it was very meant to be, and I know that I have a huge angel over there that sends me blessings, which is my grandma. And, you know, this opportunity was not an easy decision to make, especially because New Mexico is home and that's where my family is. And anyone who knows me, and I think all of you here obviously do, knows the struggles that I've been through in terms of legal status and all of those hardships. And those hardships have shaped me to be the person I am today and the things that I'm grateful for and will always be grateful for. And my family is obviously a priority, so I was not going to take any job that tore me apart from my family or just because I was going to get a big fancy title. I'm not that type of person. So when I got the opportunity, I made it very clear that my priorities were my family and that if I was not able to be in town at least once a month, I wouldn't take it. So, you know, I kind of thought that they were going to tell me, well, Cindy, thanks, but no thanks. And lo and behold, you know, the founder of this organization tells me, well, Cindy, that's exactly why I chose you. And he said, you know, that's exactly why I think you are the person that we had been looking for. And we know that you have the right heart to do this. And I value that. And I'm grateful for that. And I think all of you here know that my heart is truthful to New Mexico. It's truthful to my family and all of you that have been part of my life in a very different way.
and especially my parents. Gracias, papá y mamá. I'm not even gonna talk.
Bravo!
Pero es por ustedes que estoy donde estoy y que he tenido las oportunidades que he tenido, yo sé. Y les quiero dar las gracias por haberme traído a un país que me ha dado tanto. Y I'm just so grateful for the opportunities that I've gotten thanks to their sacrifices and all their work and everything that they had to leave behind when they left the country that they came from.
We've been trying to find ways to stay connected. You know, if it's not me going to Chicago, it's how do we find ways to bring her to Little Rock? And FaceTiming has been incredibly useful these days. I feel like I didn't take advantage of it as much when I was back home. Being here FaceTime has been incredibly helpful because it's much more interesting, and I feel like it's a much better connection when you're able to see that person and you're talking to them versus being over the phone.
We just heard a little bit from Eric and Cindy, who, as we mentioned before, are brother and sister. I've known them both for quite some time, and they really do have a close bond, and they're finding new and innovative ways to stay close as they embark on their new beginnings. I know that farewells can be difficult, but sometimes are necessary for us to continue with our professional and academic growth. Rafa, you also got a chance to talk to Nayeli at her farewell party and record a little bit. What was that experience like?
I got the opportunity to go to Nayeli's farewell party, where she had many friends attend, particularly some of her indigenous friends who she has conducted research with, some McNair buddies, and just the overall friends from the campus community. And it was really interesting to see what her friends had to say about her leaving, but also how they're going to choose to stay connected.
It didn't seem so real until, like, right now, this party. Like, we're actually having a going away party. We were shopping for a going away gift today. And so at first, you know, we're excited for her. She's getting into grad school. She's going to do amazing things in her life, and that's awesome. But it's really sad that we're going to lose a friend and someone so close. And we feel like a girl gang, so one of our wolves is going away, and we're going to be lone wolves again. So it's bittersweet, but we all know we're going to conquer the world in our respective places, and I think that's what we look forward to, is coming back together when we're adults and professionals and doing big things in our lives. So yeah,
we text like every day, Snapchat, Instagram, just like every social media thing you can think of, that's what we do. And I was just telling her earlier, I was like, we can FaceTime when you go to Target together. She's just super strong. Like, I don't think she'll have any trouble. She like finds people wherever she goes. She's just an awesome person.
Nayeli, when you hear this, I want to tell you, although you may not believe it, you changed our lives in a way. And when you graduate from school, I want to have a potato salad cake with red chili topping made for you, girl.
We just finished listening to one of our local New Mexican bands called The Dat. Their song was called The Move.
And now we're going to listen to Daniela's words about receiving her white coat, a very special moment in her transition into medical school.
We recently had our white coat ceremony, which is this big ceremony where the incoming class of medical students receive their white coat and recite the Code of Geneva. I solemnly pledge to dedicate my life to the service of humanity. The wealth and well-being of my patient will be my first consideration. I will respect the autonomy and dignity of my patient. I will maintain the utmost respect for human life. I will not permit considerations of age, disease or disability, creed, ethnic origin, gender, nationality, political affiliation, race, sexual orientation, social standing, or any other factor to intervene between my duty and my patient. I will not use my medical knowledge to violate human rights and civil liberties, even under threat. I make these promises solemnly, freely, and upon my honor. That was really special. I've been looking forward to that for so long. And so to be there that day was really, really special, to have my family there, my parents and my brothers, and everyone who supported me all along was really special. Receiving the white coat was like a dream come true. I had been looking forward to this day for so, so long. And to have my family's name on that white coat is this feeling that I don't even know I can describe.
To conclude the show, we're going to listen to some farewell words by Nayeli, Daniela, and Eric.
That I just want to keep going for my nieces, my nephew, especially my nephew Miguel, because I never know if he's listening or not. When I started this whole talk about I'm going to try to go to grad school, and my nephew just out of nowhere one day just said, I'm really thinking of pursuing a doctorate after college. And I just, like, I felt so proud that he said that, because I knew that, like, he learned that language from me. It's just a reminder to keep going, because now it's like, well, Miguel already knows what a doctorate is. And he kind of has an idea of the process that somebody's going to go through for grad school. And he's kind of counting on me to, like, finish that so to better guide him. I just have, like, really high hopes for him. His generation has to be better. Even when my friends now are starting to have children, and I'm at the auntie level, I hold their kids and I just, like, say a little prayer for them. Like, I hope that you're everything that we pray for. Because I just feel like everybody, us as undocumented people in this country, we get so much crap and we put up with so much discrimination. And I wouldn't want the next generation to grow up like that. Like, they have to be better, and we have to do better for them.
Cindy, I just want to say thank you for all of your support over the past few years, for constantly cheering me on and pushing me to do my best. Thank you. I am so, so proud of you and everything that you've accomplished, and I'm so, so proud of everything that you've accomplished so far, and all of the work that you've done for our communities to help everyone who doesn't have an advocate. And it means a lot to our community to see you on TV just speaking up for us and see you doing big things in Chicago. It means the world to us, to our families, and to our community. So thank you, and we are all so, so proud of you. Hey, Eric, I just want to say I'm really, really proud of you. I know how hard you've worked to get to where you are today, and I know all of the obstacles that you've had to overcome. It hasn't always been easy, and there's been so many barriers, but you've managed to overcome those because you're passionate about this dream. You've overcome so many barriers to achieve your dream and to get to where you are today, and I know that you will be an amazing attorney one day.
Cindy, I appreciate everything you've done for me. I am grateful for having you as a sister, and I feel honored and can't wait to see you. I love you, and you're an incredible support to me, and I can't wait to see you again. Daniela, hey babe, I love you. I thank you for being with me and going through frustrating days. Every day might not be the best, but just know that I'm always thinking about you, and I love you.
Feeling my way through the darkness, guided by a beating heart. I can't tell where the journey will end, but I know where to start.
Thank you for listening to episode 1, season 2 of UndocuTalks, titled New Beginnings. In this episode, we got to hear from some of our amazing Undocu scholars. And if any of you listeners are also embarking on new journeys this semester, cheers to you. This has been your host, Alejandro Mendiaz Rivera, and along with me, Rafael Martinez, who conducted the 3 interviews we listened to in the episode, Froilán Orozco as our sound engineer, and we were also joined by Norma Ramirez, host for our mental health segment, and Frank Berlanga Medina, co-host for the education segment. Throughout the season, you'll also get to hear from the rest of our UndocuTalks collective members, which include Nancy Canales, Melissa Garcia, Rosy Evelyn Lima de Padilla, Julio Molina, and of course, my news co-host, Ms. Cindy Nava. And a special shout out to our graphic designer, Jerry Mateo.
Jerry Mateo Designs. My job is to tell stories and communicate values through design. If you are interested in my work, follow me on Instagram at Jerry Mateo Design.
As you wait for the second episode of the season, we invite you to revisit past episodes from season one. They're available on all major podcasting platforms. UndocuTalks is an open collective, so if you're interested in cooperating or collaborating or contributing to our show, please contact us at UndocuTalks@gmail.com or through our social media platforms, which are Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at UndocuTalks.
We would like to give a special thanks to the Department of Chicana and Chicano Studies at the University of New Mexico for allowing us to use their space to record this episode.
We are Chicano Chicana Studies at the University of New Mexico. If you're interested in receiving a BA online or a graduate certificate in Chicano Chicana Studies, please visit our website at chicanos.unm.edu.